We can't just pretend we're new people. Or that the past doesn't exist.
You really don't remember, do you?
Your husband's not who you think he is.
Why did you lie?
She's starting to ask questions I can't answer.
Maybe I was wrong about everything.
Sophie, what's going on?
Just putting the pieces together.
Aha! It's about jigsaws!
Welcome to Cord Killers, the show about watching the stuff you love when you want, where you want, however you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, I'm Brian Brushwood. And Bryce, what did we just see?
That was a trailer for Apple TV Plus's upcoming Surface, which is streaming July 29th. A woman suffers a serious head injury and she has a lot of memory loss, and the people around her are trying to piece together what actually happened to her. But she finds out that maybe the people who are helping her are actually not helping her.
Mm-hmm.
What's amazing is,
kind of thing.
If I had not seen that preview, that could have been a comedy.
So that's July 29th.
I can't remember anything.
Yeah.
Waka waka.
So it's the Apple Surface. I assume the next season will be the Apple Surface Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll take it on the road and it'll be the Apple Surface Go. These are Microsoft jokes, in case anybody does get them. Let's go to the primary target. Now, you, the wise regular listener of Cord Killers, already know that Netflix is considering an ad-supported tier, and a lot of sources have been saying that's definitely happening, but we have the official word from Netflix co-CEO Ted Sarandos at the Cannes Lions. Brian, you've been to Cannes Lions, right?
I've been to Cannes Lyon.
Thank you. That's why I was asking.
I knew it was classy because they had all of these banners saying they had a dude with his pants down around his ankles urinating, and it says, please don't urinate in the street. Cannes Lyon.
Cannes Lyon. Por favor would not be French. Anyway.
You know what? that would be them being racist against, like, Spaniards coming in.
We assume you're Spanish if you're peeing in the street. Yeah, that would be rude. Very rude.
Yep.
But some people think the French are rude. I think they're fine. Anyway, at Cannes Lyon Advertising Festival, Sarandos not only confirmed the plans are going ahead, they're doing advertising, but explained why Netflix has changed its mind on doing advertising. He said, quote, we've left a big customer segment off the table, which is people who say, hey, Netflix is too expensive for me and I don't mind advertising. It's like, well, there are people like that. He also added, we're not adding ads to Netflix as you know it today. We're adding an ad tier for folks who say, hey, I want a lower price and I'll watch ads. He's trying to combat the idea that, like, wait, I'm going to have ads on my existing Netflix subscription. He's like, no, the existing ones will not have ads. We'll be adding a new tier that will. He would not clarify what partners Netflix is talking to. There's a lot of folks who can provide the ad tech for Netflix, so they don't have to build it themselves. A lot of folks that provide that ad tech to lots of other companies out there. Google and NBC Universal both have ad tech sections of their businesses and apparently are the leading candidates. But Sarandos only said, we're talking to all of them right now. He explained that they want a pretty easy entry to the market, but that, quote, what we do at first will not be representative of what the product will be ultimately. He says, I want our product to be better than TV, the ad product. He added that the company wants to build an ad experience that is more integrated and less interruptive. To that point, Variety had an article about Fox News subscription service Fox Nation experimenting with running banner ads from Camping World, actually, on the bottom third of the screen during episodes of Duck Dynasty. So no interrupting for a 30-second ad or 2 minutes of ads. You keep watching without interruption. You just get a little lower third advertisement kind of comes in and then goes away. They're going to continue to test that, provide what they call promotional billboards. Now, I know a lot of folks don't like the idea of ads interrupting a show. Brian, how do you think they'll feel about ads that just kind of pop up from the bottom?
I love this as a middle solution to getting revenue without technically being ad supported or whatever. To me, and I know this is our second or third lap on the topic, and to be honest, Tom, I would love to sort of pick your brain about whether or not you perceive things the way I do. I feel like the very worst solution would be to brand something called like Netflix Lite, that has ads, you know, something that ruins the Netflix brand. And the example I always give is before Toyota launched Lexus, they said, would you rather buy a Lexus or a Toyota Supreme? And everybody, all the consumers said Toyota Supreme, but that would have ruined the brand right at the get-go. Instead, they did the smart thing and they, with the same factories, created a different brand called Lexus. Let me ask you, like, where are you at in terms of the prestige of Netflix? Because what I perceive is the best thing Netflix could do is be, hey, man, we're the place where awesome stories are told. Now, we happened to be available either directly or, you know, without ads, or you could see us a bunch of other places. But we're Netflix, and we're pristine and pure. And if you ever see an ad, it's not us, Netflix. It's the fault of wherever it is you came to get your Netflix.
My instinct is that what Netflix will do is not rebrand, not provide a different brand, but sign you up at the bottom. You know how when you go to sign up, they usually start you at the tier that's like, it's just one stream and one account. If you want more, click this tier over here. Below that, they'll put a, like, you know, this one's $1.99 a month and with ads. Like, they will minimize the idea that it's with ads, because the thing is, everybody's doing ads. Peacock is doing ads already. HBO Max is going to have an ad-supported tier. So is Disney Plus. So I don't think they'll feel like they'll suffer by comparison for having the ads. What they'll want to do is emphasize the cheap price and then disclose, like, it's going to have a few ads. And what I get from Sarandos, again, this is all just my instinct, is we have talked about the way we can do ads that will be different and not interruptive and maintain the Netflix experience. And we may not have that out of the gate, but we have a roadmap to getting there. And that's why I picked this Variety article, not to say that's what Netflix is going to do, but I imagine it's going to be something like that, where they're going to say, look, our way of doing ads is better than TV. We're not just going to interrupt a Netflix show with a 30-second commercial like Peacock does on their service. We're going to have something less intrusive, but still worth it in order to subsidize your point. And then I think they're going to differentiate the plan based on price, and sort of try to minimize the idea of, like, it's an ad-supported tier that's different.
I think you're almost certainly right. And if I was placing bets, I would place my bet right alongside yours. Bryce, before I disclose my opinions, what do you think?
I think new ad formats are overdue. You know, stopping the show to play an ad is, I don't know, almost out of fashion. A lot of younger folks who are listening or out there don't see ads. They don't see mid-roll ads. Maybe they'll see them on YouTube, but then also they've got blockers on YouTube, or they're specifically used to them in places like Pluto or say Zumo, where it's free and the door's open for you, but you do have to watch a few ads. If you're also, I think if you're paying for Netflix with ads, you're going to get the same Hulu problem, which is, why am I paying for Hulu with ads and then paying more to lose ads that I don't want to see? And then the ads, like there's a lot of questions, and it makes it very conditional to say this is good, this is bad. At the same time, it makes a lot of sense for Netflix to have a $5 a month plan. Well, there are a lot of places in the world where they need that.
And keep in mind, a lot of my branding opinions come from the idea that a brand should be a forever brand. It should be a Rolex or what have you. But a lot of people launch a brand with the intention of eroding it slowly over time to maximize the profits from it quarter by quarter, each time making it less and less the thing it originally was. You know, like, for example, Toyota's Scion brand was originally marketed to hip young people who didn't have a lot of money, which is why they were all, you know, $15,000 to $20,000 each. But those people are going to stick with the Scion brand. I don't know if it's still around. Might not
it's
be.
It's not.
It doesn't matter. But the point is, in a hypothetical universe, they would have tracked and seen that they were upwardly mobile or whatever and kept it alive and created a luxury brand to benefit from it. I gotta confess, maybe this is just me being pessimistic, but the most sensible, easy, dumb thing quarter by quarter to please shareholders is to just throw ads in there, and who cares?
I mean, yeah.
I don't think Netflix is going to do that. And the reason I don't is they understand that there is a group of people that's going to hate them no matter what they do. And because they've been around so long, that group has grown and has got more vocal. They also understand, though, that they can make a name for themselves if they get it right. And people are like, oh, well, that's different, you know, and Netflix did it first. They have historically been that company, the first one to do streaming at all, the first one to do streaming originals, the first one to try the crazy, like, let's do games and streaming at the same time. Who knows? Maybe the ads will only be in the games. I don't know. But I think they want to be like, we're going to prove once again that Netflix is always doing it differently than everybody else.
I just had a horrifying thought. So Netflix has already figured out, as have HBO Max and a bunch of other things, that people make fan casts for their favorite shows. And they exist outside of their ability to get their hooks into them and so on. So, you know, Hacks has its own fan cast with access to all of the producers, writers, directors, talent of Hacks or whatever. And we've seen Netflix do that with Ta-Dum, with all of that stuff.
Netflix even has some podcasts that go along with its shows that are official and stuff. Yeah.
Here is my horrifying vision, scarier than anything you will see on Stranger Things. What is the natural progress for a show that is popular and ceases to be profitable for the network? They cancel it. The next natural thing is the creators of that show create a spiritual successor to that thing. And where do they go? They go to Kickstarter or Patreon or any other place. Netflix, who has figured out that that's the natural order of things. Here's my pitch. Netflix creates their own Kickstarter-like environment where they get a taste of everything afterward.
Flickstarter.
I mean, and again, I'm telling it like a ghost story, but
yeah.
There's a non-zero chance. I can see this happening.
This is the kind of idea that I don't get the sense they will do, but if they do, I will not be shocked, and I will give you full marks for calling it, because it's certainly the kind of idea that could come up in a boardroom meeting, right? Or not a boardroom. I don't mean the stockholders. I mean in a meeting, in a creative meeting, like, what do we do? Oh, you know, no bad ideas. Everybody throws something out, and somebody throws that idea out, and everybody goes, huh, that's interesting. Table that one. Because Netflix has done a lot of that kind of hackery, like, we're trying this out, we're trying that out. Love Flickstarter.
Well, and especially considering the fact that all it takes is some VP to pitch it and some higher up to say, well, what would that cost us? And the VP would say, oh, I'll just give a call to the boys down in legal. We'll add exactly one paragraph of boilerplate. We figure 3 out of 4 young upstarts won't even notice it, and we'll have them where the moment we greenlight their project, they'll be bound to even a spiritual successor has to be in our marketplace.
This is why you are coming up with the crazy ideas.
This is why I'm evil.
Well, because my version of the crazy idea would have been like the cheap version of Netflix just has suited versions of everything. You don't get the actual.
Abridged Netflix? Netflix abridged?
Yeah. Where it's just recreations by Jack Black and his friends.
I wonder how you could capture. Yeah, you know what? Forget it. Forget I said any of that.
I opened the rabbit hole. Brian refused to go down. Everyone mark that down.
No, yeah. I just looked into the abyss and I flinched.
Anyway, yeah. We're getting ads on Netflix. Everybody's going to say they hate them and that they won't sign up for them and they hate Netflix. And a bunch of people are going to sign up, and it's going to be profitable for Netflix. And fewer people are going to cancel than say they're going to cancel, because everybody likes to say they hate the popular thing, but way fewer people do it. That's my prediction.
Tom, I have a hilarious thing I was going to say. I was going to say, thank goodness we've never been on Netflix. And then I realized that hacking the system was on Netflix. but meanwhile, you can support
also,
us directly.
There's a shot of DTNS in a movie that's on Netflix.
That's amazing. The important thing is that you can pay us, and Ted Sarando sees none of it if you go to patreon.com/cordkillers. What all do we get?
Sorry, what?
Oh, no. I'm tossing to you for the benefits.
The benefits. Well, early access to Spoiler in Time, our exclusive After Talk podcast where we tell you the real secrets of the show, get updates direct to your inbox, an RSS feed with no login that's just for you and get you those Spoiler in Time episodes early. And all of that is less than the price of a cup of coffee.
Do you know what, Tom?
You can't find a cup of coffee for the price of cordial.
I was about to say, and the one guarantee that Netflix will never see a dollar of it, but the truth is we all subscribe to Netflix, so they will see a dollar of it. Sorry.
Yeah, it is a business expense, actually. Yeah. You're right. That's a good point. But we do it so you don't have to. How about that?
Yeah. Think of all the money you're saving.
Yeah.
Cancel your Netflix account right now. And give us just $1 per episode.
A very small portion of that, and then we'll tell you what's on Netflix.
Perfect.
Way more efficient. Patreon.com/cordkillers. Let's talk about how to watch. All right. So when I would say the majority of the populace, certainly a lot of people stayed home in 2020. A lot of folks signed up for streaming services, right? And over the course of a couple of years, a lot of new services were launched. You know, we got HBO Max, we got Peacock, all that stuff. So it's not a surprise that people would cut those streaming services back as they learn which ones they actually like and spend less time at home. So they have fewer time to watch things. PricewaterhouseCoopers' latest estimate shows that streaming VOD or SVOD services in the U.S. will bring in 13% more revenue in 2022 over last year. That would be down from 19.5% in 2021 and a 27% growth rate we saw in 2020. So still growing, but growing a little slower than it did over the past 2 years. And the U.S. is saturated. It's the largest streaming market in the world at $29 billion. China is second at $11.4 billion. They got a lot more people there. So there's not as much room to grow here in the U.S. Now, there is room to grow elsewhere. Latin America is expected to be the fastest growing in the future. Asia Pacific is the next, followed by Europe, Middle East, Africa, and then North America at the end. None of this is surprising. We've been telling you for years that everybody's going to jump into the streaming game until the market gets crowded and people start getting selected. COVID certainly accelerated that process, but that's essentially what we're seeing. The market is now crowded, and people are now getting selective. Brian, is it time to pick some winners and losers? Who do you think is going to survive? Now they're in the arena.
Okay, so if our thesis is we've hit saturation, and people are hungry for new content, and they're looking at their monthly bill, things are slowing down, we're theoretically headed into a recession, maybe already in one, you have to cut something. I got to tell you, man, I cut Netflix first, because if you're willing to cut anything, you cut the thing you know you can go back to fastest and easiest. And I feel like Netflix made a name for itself. It rode the beast up. It's going to ride the beast down.
Interesting. You may be right. And yet,
I may
Netflix
be crazy.
Still, Netflix still have a Billy Joel documentary. No, you may be right. And yet Netflix may still yet survive because people will go back. Because my theory on Netflix is everybody says they want to cancel it until they go to hit the button. And then they realize like, oh, wait, but there is that one thing coming up that I forgot about. Or someone in their family goes, oh, hold on, don't cancel it yet. I'm still finishing this show. Netflix is that thing that nobody thinks they like until the rubber meets the road, and then they realize they use it more than they thought. And I think that's because it's familiar, it's furniture, and people forget that it's even the thing that they rely on because it's been around for so long. I think Netflix survives this because of that. You might be right that people still cancel it, but then go back because they realize, oh, wait, there was that thing I want to watch now.
I am obsessed with this idea of evil Netflix right now. So I'd like to imagine you go to cancel your account. You click on the button to cancel my account. And it goes, and the first thing you see is about 10 seconds of some famous movie of somebody about to give up, and it's tailored to your interests. And you see about 10 seconds, you're like, why am I watching this movie? And a pop-up says, so you want to cancel, huh? Just click here if you want to cancel. And just you like click on it, and it's another clip from another movie you love.
Yeah, exactly.
About quitters giving up.
I think the stealth successor here is HBO Max, even at its high price. Everybody loves it. It's got great stuff. I've known more than one person who's like, yeah, I don't subscribe to a lot of streaming services. Which ones do you subscribe to? HBO Max, because I wanted to get X movie or I wanted to get this show. I think Netflix because it's furniture and HBO Max because it's good are my top two contenders to stick around.
Yes.
Disney Plus just has its own world it lives in. So I don't see it going anywhere else. I wonder about Peacock and Paramount Plus. And I especially wonder what Disney's going to do with Hulu.
Well, first of all, I don't know if you saw breaking news in the chat. One of our viewers right now just canceled Netflix based on my advice. Pro tip, cancel all of them. Except for maybe Amazon Prime if you want free delivery, because that's a separate benefit, which I thought was a dumb thing about the service. But now I realize it's going to make it very difficult to unsubscribe from this video service because you're getting another tangible benefit to it.
I'll say I unsubscribed to Amazon Prime a few weeks ago and it told me, you know, they try to keep you on. It told me you watched two shows on Amazon Prime Video the last year.
But you
ordered
you canceled the ship.
I did cancel the shipping.
The shipping service.
I did cancel that too because they were like, you ordered 7 packages this year. Nah, I'm good. I think I'll just move my $120 somewhere else.
Yeah, sometimes the analytics supported decision. So yeah, I do think Prime Video will. Well, I didn't even mention it because I almost forget that you can subscribe to it independently because most people don't. I reserve the right to revise this if we really start seeing people canceling Amazon Prime in large numbers, but so far they haven't, because Amazon's done a good job of giving you so many things, that you're more likely to not be a Bryce than to be a Bryce. And you'll be like, oh, but I do rely
on that. You
know
what? Statistically, I just did a survey of all of planet Earth, and it turns out out of the 8 billion humans, you're more likely to not be Bryce Castillo than to be Castillo.
What? So that can't be. Can you check that again? What is?
I don't know, man.
I know the margin of error is.
So I think Prime Video survives well. It really does leave me with Hulu. Like Disney just doesn't seem to know what. There's lots of good strategies they could do with Hulu. I don't think it's it's obviously going to die, but it has more questions around it than other things. Paramount, because Paramount, aka Viacom CBS, is kind of a company that people aren't sure. It's not as big. Where's it going to go? Peacock, I almost feel like Comcast is going to have something. NBC Universal is going to have something, but maybe it's not Peacock down the road. Maybe they just rip it all up and start over from scratch somehow.
I'll tell you this much. The real winners are going to be all of these ad-supported free services, all of these AVODs. I was out to lunch with Justin, and my eyes drifted over to, like, I know that movie, I know that movie, I know that movie. And then I realized I'm watching an ad for Tubi. And it's like, dude, these guys are going to crush during the difficult times of any kind of recession. That's when plays are made and real estate of the mind is grabbed. I mean, kudos to the free services.
And also, guess who owns Tubi? Fox, the people experimenting with the new ad things on Fox Nation that we talked about in the last story. So, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I'm not even gonna mention Tubi and Freevee and
Pluto, and
because they will all be fine. Some of them will fall away from lack of use. You know, there will be competition on content in those, but they are positioned to last a lot longer. They won't be the first to go.
What if they just made a streaming service where all of the people who make video let you watch it in one place and they called it Hulu?
See, that's the joke, right? But the reason I don't find that joke as funny as other people do, and it is funny. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, okay.
It's a funny joke. But I'm like, yeah, but you're forgetting that what this gets you is the control you complained about when you didn't have cable, right? So you know, just keep that in mind. You are in charge of what, and which is why we're even talking about what stuff people are going to cancel.
So if we're picking one winner and one loser, my one loser, my big loser is going to be In America, Netflix. My big winner is going to be any free ad supported tier of anything.
I'm going to call HBO Max my most likely to win. And I'm going to call Paramount Plus the most likely to falter.
I can't even
say what you think.
Yeah.
Cordkillers@gmail.com. All right. Let's talk about what to watch and Under Surveillance. Not like this, Ted. It's all about location, location, location. Under Surveillance. Speaking of Netflix, Netflix dropped the official trailer for the final episodes of the penultimate season 4 of Stranger Things coming July 1st. Lots of folks that I talked to have been pleased with season 4 so far, are more excited about finishing this season than they were in previous seasons. Brian, where are you at with it?
I'm too busy fascinated with the soap opera of everybody watching season 4. Like I've been told, skip season 3, it's not worth it, just jump in on season 4. It's the greatest thing ever. All of a sudden it's an incredible horror story. And then I ask the exact same person, whose name is Justin Robert Young, how it's going, and he says, "Oof, getting a little bored over here, real slow. Why don't you get back to the scary ghost guy?" So I literally have no idea how to feel. And as you know, I am increasingly skeptical of investing my time in things that may not pay off. So I am comfortably sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah. Well, starting July 1st, everybody can give their recommendations to Brian. Should he jump into season 4 or not?
Cordkillers@gmail.com.
Bryce, are you a Stranger Thing?
Well,
I mean, yes, and
that way, yeah. I watched the first season. I thought it was good, but it's too long in the tooth. I liked the idea from season one that it was going to be like anthologyized. I don't care about these kids anymore. They already saved the world.
Show me other kids.
Yeah. Well, maybe not.
There is a lot of teeth.
Put them on Mars. Stranger Mars.
Yeah. For All Mankind crossover. Ah. I like it. Amazon's The Rings of Power EP, Lindsay Weber, told IGN that the series is returning to practical effects for the orcs. Visual effects will be used for minor tweaks to kind of clean things up, or during action scenes when you need like 1,000 orcs, and that's just not something you can practically do. We're also going to see some female orcs.
Hot female orc action aside, I was really struck by the generational divide in the latest Jurassic World movie, which we talked about. My kids really did not like the practical effects, whereas I loved it. I loved the return of puppetry with Grogu on Mandalorian. I loved, I even loved the puppetry of, I think it was the second of the Disney era trilogy of Star Wars stuff where they went back to having Yoda be a puppet and all that stuff. I love all of that, but I just think, I think there's something that is visceral to anybody younger than 30 on that. Bryce, do you have a strong take on that?
You know, I'm from that same era of like the practical effects are just going to be better. But you look at what Marvel does. I mean, even watching Obi-Wan, like there's a lot of money into making CG good. And so I think it is different than it used to be. I think the CG's gotten a lot better. And if it means that it comes out cheaper or easier to make, then that's up for the filmmakers to decide, IMO.
I don't think what we're talking about is nearly as drastic as what I'm about to say. But I remember when I was a kid, people saying, "I just don't get color television. Black and white is fine. I prefer black and white."
Oh my God. Like,
I literally knew people who said that. And that is a clear example of like, it was fine the way it was. I'm nostalgic about that time in my life. And this new thing is just like, whatever. I don't think we're that way about practical effects exactly, because practical effects could be very, very good. And granted, black and white can be cool because of noir aspect and it's a choice and all that. I'm not talking about that. But I do think there is an element of we were trained that computer generated imagery will never look as good. Right. We were shown it over and over. Well, they did computer generated imagery and they could do some things they couldn't do with practical effects, but the practical effects were always looking better. And so I think we trained ourselves to expect that and to associate seeing practical effects with quality, whereas your kids weren't trained with that. And because computer generated imagery is so much better now, they're like, "What are you talking about? This looks great. the graphic effects look amazing. Why do you need the practical effects?
So how do you think this one is going to land? Are they intentionally maybe trying to appeal to an older demographic by showing the effort of doing practical effects?
I don't think they're taking that into account, honestly. I think they're just thinking like, well, everybody likes practical effects, you know. Let's do practical effects on the orcs and everybody will love it. And they're probably right. Most people will.
And there's also probably going to be a lot of orcs who don't need to all be painted, you know, the best way in digital. There will be a lot of big, wide scenes where you just need to throw it on so it looks like they're orky.
Well, they did practical effects for Lord of the Rings orcs. It was The Hobbit where he switched to CG.
Yeah, but if they've got a lot of actors or background orcs, what have you, it might actually be cheaper to do practical instead of CG for every person.
I
just hope they put it out in black and white.
I mean, you joke, and yet that's exactly what Guillermo del Toro did with his last movie. He put it out in color and then put it out again in black and white. Which
Fury Road.
But I love that question of does everybody love practical effects? Because if I'm speaking for my children, they actively hated that part.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that is interesting. And I think Jurassic is a clear example of like, y'all were trained on the 90s dinosaurs, so let's give you those. And
exactly.
Those people trained cheered. Yeah, yeah. Speaking of the 90s, Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe is the second movie in the franchise after Beavis and Butthead Do America, which came out in 1996, 26 years ago. The new movie has them time traveling 25 years into the future. So they're the same Beavis and Butthead from the 90s, having their first smartphones, etc. You can watch it on Paramount Plus right now.
Tom?
Yes, Brian?
One of the brilliant things about Beavis and Butthead is that it brought that MST3K sensibility to judge 90s MTV as it was unfolding and happening. There is a lot of power in presenting yourself as the fool, but actually providing scathing commentary. So you can secretly be smart while appearing dumb. 3, 4. This trailer was garbage. And I would hope very, very deeply that Mike Judge is just hiding all of the smartness for the actual product. I don't know. I don't know. It was awful.
I haven't watched it. So I can't say the movie, I mean, but I look at this and think, I really liked Frog Baseball at Spike and Mike's at the Dolby Theater in Austin in 94.
Those were a lot of words that I understood. I'm going to gamble that Bryce understood about half of them.
I'm going to say, are those strains? Are those names of strains, maybe? I'm not quite sure.
Frog Baseball was the animated short that first introduced us to Beavis and Butthead.
Spike and Mike's
was an animated short festival.
And Dobie was?
Was a theater in Austin in the Dobie building.
Yes. Okay. All right. Now we're all caught up. Yep. Okay.
Anyway, I was actually disappointed by Beavis and Butthead on MTV. I was like, this isn't fun as the Frog Baseball thing. And then the movie Do America, I was like, well, this is closer to that, I guess. But I really haven't liked him since 1994. So I'm probably the wrong person
to ask. Well, and I wonder how much of it is, I feel like Mike Judge, if not his best final form, higher on the Pokemon evolution scale, King of the Hill was great. Office Space was great, and Idiocracy was great, and all that stuff.
This Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe feels like a pure nostalgia play to me. But again, I haven't watched the movie.
Fingers crossed.
They brought back Beavis and Butthead a few years ago to MTV.
Yep,
so
I remember that.
This is would be in track with that, right?
Fingers crossed.
All right, let's talk about what we've had our eyes on. Brian, what's something you've been watching?
You know what? Almost exclusively, we cover things that, you know, our eyes are on in this segment where we talk about what our eyes are on.
That's why we called it Eyes On.
Yeah.
But well, no, now that got good enough for Brian. Brian doesn't play by the rules.
No, dude. My ears are on the Audible original Deeper and Deeper. Look, you're a fan of the deep. I'm a fan of the deep. I look forward to reading his memoir. In the meantime, you know, I follow him on VicVoc, Facebook, VotBook, Votify, And there's a Vodafi original in which we get a 1 hour long interview with, that's right, the boys own one of the former members of the Seven, The Deep, and a special appearance repeatedly from his wife, slightly off mic. it's a full interview about his memoir, Deeper. It's amazing. It's a Audible original that actually contributes to the overall narrative. If you're following the boys, it clearly takes place at some point during this current season, because they reference things that happened at the beginning of the season and take you up to speed. They also give relevant plot details that shed light on various characters in the boys this season. It's somewhere. I mean, it's definitely all scripted, but it's definitely performed as though it's off the cuff and an authentic interview. And it lands in that uncanny valley somewhere in between. After about 15 minutes, though, I was fully buckled in to this ridiculous Vought universe. They stop and they have commercial breaks for their theme parks and Brave Maves yogurts and all that stuff. Uh-huh. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I highly recommend you guys give it a try.
And how long is it?
It's an hour.
One hour and 10 minutes.
It's just an hour.
I mean, the only problem with that is if you're one of the people on Audible that has credits,
I believe it's 100% free.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. It is behind the paywall. You have to be in the Audible environment, that kind of thing.
Gotcha. I want to give a shout out to For All Mankind. It's only on the second episode this season, but it is still good. It shouldn't be, honestly. This was a premise that I thought was great. And I'm like, yeah, but once they get out of the 60s.
Stop being so good. Ronald D. Moore, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You were played out in 2008.
I was ready to just give up and be like, well, it had its run. They pushed it too far, but it's great. One of the things that's great about it is they have the perfect balance of a consistent alternate timeline. Because if you're not familiar, For All Mankind begins season one with the Soviets beating the U.S. to the moon. And that changes everything. So they have a consistent alternate timeline from there that just sort of plays out in the background. It never gets detailed enough that you start to think, well, wait a minute, how would that be the possible? You know, they don't get that detailed, but they have it inform the main story enough that it feels like it's deep. For instance, a lot of the internet stuff that we think of as the dot-com boom of the 2000s happens in the 90s. And you have private space exploration taking off at that time with a different entrepreneur, because it's the 90s, right? So you don't have the same entrepreneur set that you have in the 2000s, but it's hostile to the government. It's going rogue rather than like SpaceX and everything working with NASA. It's in competition with NASA. And so that becomes in this season the third competitor to get to Mars. Because it begins with them getting to the moon and exploring the moon and the combat between the Soviet Union and the United States. And now there's a space race to Mars happening in the mid-90s. You have some weird things in the background, like Gary Hart ends up becoming president because, you know, certain things didn't happen and he got to run earlier than he did in reality. It's just fun. I'm a big fan of alternate history, big fan of space adventures. It's got great space adventure stuff. So I don't know. Wanted to give a nice note.
Can I drop in at the Mars stuff? Because I heard middling reviews of the moon race stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's why I thought, like, oh, okay, so season one was the bit, and they're doing a yeoman's-like job keeping the bit going in season two and season three, and I still found them exciting, but it wasn't the same spike as season one. I would be very curious what you think of season four. I don't think you need to know any of season two and three to make sense of it. Some of the emotional impact will be undermined because there's storylines on characters that really get deepened in season two and three. But I'd be really curious what you think of the whole Helios is their private space venture and how they treat that and everything.
You know what? That might be a fun Sunday afternoon journey for me to dive into and just kind of report.
Yeah, and there's only two episodes out of season four anyway, so you wouldn't even have that far to go.
Cool.
All right. What should we be on the lookout for, Brett?
Hey, I want to let everybody know that Summer Games Done Quick started yesterday. This is the 7-day-long marathon stream where speedrunners from around the country and the world gather in one place and speedrun a bunch of games for 7 days straight. That's all it is. They just play video games really, really fast. And it's really fascinating. You know, they have a whole schedule online. This one is raising money for Doctors Without Borders. And if you don't watch live or if you can't watch live, they are very good about putting this stuff on YouTube, usually the day of or the day after. So there's already a bunch of stuff out there now. But I always like going in and seeing what games I like and then seeing how people break them. Have you guys watched any games on Quick?
I've seen several of them. Man, I saw an incredible speedrun of, I think it was Fallout 3 that took advantage of a certain exploit. Are they still allowing, like, you know, a factory default as it was shipped? You can use these bugs in the game in order to jump from, you know, straight to the end?
That's the cool thing about speedrunning is that every game is its own community, basically. And so the community decides that, right? Hey, we're only going to use this patch. We're only going to use this. We're not going to use these exploits. And that's what's very cool about Games Done Quick is that it brings all of those communities together where everyone has a lot of the same rules, same, you know, formats, but they try and do a bunch of different stuff. You'll see 20-minute speed runs. You'll see multi-hour speed runs. There's a lot of really cool stuff there.
Do they shine a spotlight on the planning part that goes into it? Because there is sort of this massive strategy. It's like, okay, are we going to take this method or that method? Or, you know, what are you thinking to do it?
I think not during Games Done Quick, not during the two events that they put on through the year, but they do have Games Done Quick has a YouTube channel where they actually have shows and they've got people who try out speedrunning and they go in a little more depth there. So that's even more stuff that they've got on their YouTube and their Twitch. But check it out because it's live. It's very cool if you want to help raise money for Doctors Without Borders that's going on. So Games Done Quick, twitch.tv/gamesdonequick or on YouTube. If you've got something we should be on the lookout for, please email it to us, cordkillers@gmail.com.
Yeah, dude, and sooner or later, you're going to need a computer to play all these games on.
That's right.
So why not head on over to doghousesystems.com/rogue. Use promo code ROGUE at checkout. You'll be supporting us. You'll be thanking them for providing all of the equipment for the show, and you'll have exceptional customer service.
Now, Brian, do you think you should worry about the Apple M1 Pac-Man vulnerability?
Do you think
Google's Lambda became sentient? Did you know that Brave has a search engine that gives you control over it, how it ranks the results?
What
do you know
movie?
About Wi-Fi 7? Not 6, 7.
Not 6.
Why it gives you bees?
No, it does not give you bees. You know what? I'm going to prescribe you my newsletter, techtom.substack.com. We covered all of these topics and more, delivered right to your inbox, an easy thing for you to read and subscribe to. Most of those were free. Some of them are part of a paid subscription, but you can try it out for free at techtom.substack.com. Brian, just you, though.
Okay, thank goodness. I mean, luckily, it's only you and me on the call. Bryce is not here, and there's certainly not live viewers, and most certainly we're not going to put this in the podcast. Just one more time so I can take out my pen and write it down. What's that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, it's Tech Tom, like Tech Time, but with Tom, techtom.substack.com.
Okay. Oh, you know what? They put it in the chat. Wait a minute. We're live.
Oh, no. Let's move on to the front lines, quick. Amazon's Freevee, that's the one that used to be called IMDb TV, has added a couple of free streaming channels from Fuse. There's one called Fuse Beat that celebrates Black culture with movies, series, and comedy performances. That one's also available on Pluto, Roku, Vizio, and Samsung. And then Fuse Backstage also coming to Freevee that will feature music bios, performances, interviews, and more for fans of music. So Freevee getting channels, kind of like all these other fast services, free streaming channel services, adding some specialty things, some of which you can get elsewhere, some of which you can't.
It's a smart time to rebrand from IMDb TV to two syllables, Freevee.
Freevee. You know what I can say easier than IMDb? Freebie.
That's right. Meanwhile, in its fifth weekend at the theaters, Top Gun Maverick has passed the $1 billion mark at the box office, in part thanks to $29.6 million from the U.S. That was good enough to make it number two right behind Elvis, which brought in $31.1 million.
So Elvis didn't do nearly as well in its first weekend as Top Gun Maverick did, but it still was the number one movie in front of Top Gun Maverick, which is still doing good enough in its fifth weekend to be number two. Does this mean people stop going to the theaters?
No, I think we're learning to dance again. We spent a long time in bed, and now we're learning to dance again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't be going to the theater every week yet. You'll be sore.
You know what? Just dancing. Watch some TV, maybe take a walk around the block, listen to some podcasts, and eventually work your way up to the theater.
Yeah. Paramount Plus launched in the UK and Ireland on June 22nd. So folks who missed Star Trek in those markets or didn't want to use the weird ways you could get it can now get it from Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus aims to expand to 160 plus countries by the end of fiscal 2023, and Paramount announced plans for 150 international originals by 2025. I call this, you're wrong, Tom, we won't fail.
I was about to say, does revisiting this fact of expansion, because maybe you're still right, they're just expanding at the wrong time.
Well, or it's not going to work, but I feel like this is something you have to do. I feel like expanding internationally is your hedge. It's the way you get enough bulk. That's something that, like, cable services, like, you know, Charter, they couldn't expand beyond their borders, right? That's the big thing for these businesses, is you can have a service like Disney Plus and offer it everywhere. Netflix proved that too. They were the first one to say, you know what? We're lighting up Netflix everywhere it's legal for us to do so. And with the exception of China, which would make it legal, but we don't want to do what they want us to do. So they are in pretty much every country on the planet. And I think that's smart for Paramount Plus to do that.
Speaking of being all over the world, 68.5% of UK households now have access to at least one streaming service. Apple TV Plus made the biggest gains in the market, rising 27% from last quarter. Disney Plus rose 19%. Ooh, I'm feeling more secure than ever, then I bet that Netflix is going to be hurting the hardest.
It's still number one, but it's also been there longer. These two haven't been there as long.
Yeah.
I imagine the you're going to see Paramount Plus.
The stranger the things are, the harder they get unsubscribed. It's in the Bible.
The Queen's Gambit to Bridgerton that. Well, yeah. And if you didn't want to go to a theater to see Uncharted, but you're kind of curious to see Tom Holland's take on Nathan Drake, the Uncharted movie arrives on Netflix in the U.S. on July 15th.
It breaks my heart how exactly you described my experience with that movie, because I ain't seen it yet. I love the franchise. I love Tom Holland. I wanted to see it. I just, I think I slept.
Well, you probably needed the rest.
Nope.
maybe should have marketed that way. Need some rest? Come on in.
Come sleep
We're
in a seat
for you.
It's like an airplane, only you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Without the altitude sickness. Do people get altitude sickness on planes?
Yes.
I think a lot of things are like planes, but you don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Without the fear of seasitting.
Buildings.
I feel like I'm in a plane right now.
I'm in first class, baby. It swivels.
Could I get more water? All right, let's move to the dispatches from the front. Derek writes, "Hi, Tom, Brian, and Bryce. Apologies for the late response to your conversation 2 weeks ago about Netflix and Roku." Yeah, Derek, why didn't you freely give us your advice without us paying you? What took you so long? No, Derek, thank you for writing in. He says, "This sounds like it's more likely that Netflix will be working with a Google or NBCU. The discussion might be a bit moot now, but figured I'd still throw in my two cents anyway. I guess my starting question is why we think Netflix is so against being associated with having an ad-supported tier. They've publicly announced that they were doing so, and we're seeing many of the other big streaming services expand to ad-supported tiers as well. I don't think consumers will react adversely, as long as the ad-supported version is at a lower price point than the current plan. The big difference between Netflix and all of those companies is that Netflix is not a traditional media company that's built heavily on advertising. Compare that to ABC, ESPN, Disney, or Discovery Warner, Amazon, Google, CBS, Paramount, etc. For now, it seems like they'll be using advertising to help offset some costs, but they're not quite yet turning it into a more traditional media company. So to the original discussion of whether or not Netflix would acquire Roku, which they said they won't, but unless they are looking to fully transition to an advertising-based media company, the cost of acquiring and running a whole new advertising division might just be a bit too high without them changing their entire business model. Whether Netflix partners with Google, NBCU, or another company, I'll be curious to what the terms will be. Is it going to strictly be limited to running ads on that lower tier, or will Netflix also offer data of their non-ad tier users for targeting off-platform? I suppose we'll find out soon enough.
For their own brand value, I sincerely hope they partner with someone to basically shift the blame of ads to somebody else. For their own brand value, I hope that they do literally anything other than linear ads, as we talked about at the top of the show. I really do like that kind of banner ad, as obnoxious as it's going to be.
Also, when he said they'll be using advertising to help offset some costs, I realized, oh, this is not about money for Netflix. This is about acquisition. This is about the subscriber number. They don't really care about the advertising money as much as they care about being able to subsidize a lower tier at a price that will bring people in which case they can do things that other ad supported companies won't do, like keep the load low, promise not to track it, all that kind of stuff.
Hey Tom, mm-hmm. Alternately, what's a move you might make if you're terribly afraid that you're about to lose a lot of subscribers in an ever increasing tightening market?
Declare three-digit disease a thing?
That's my move. They can't steal it. It's patented. Also, I didn't do it this time. Please, five of you, subscribe. I have it. I'm maintaining a lot of composure. Sometimes three-digit disease isn't always apparent to everybody.
Okay, so that's not it, though.
No. You might offer an ad-supported free tier so that you can convincingly say to the world, we've not lost subscribers, you've lost subscribers, your face has lost subscribers, you're not bad.
Subscribers. Yeah.
Right. Matt, is a free viewer a sub? Is a free viewer counted as a subscriber?
It will be at the quarterly meeting.
Yep, absolutely.
That seems like a number that becomes less easy to trust.
That sounds communist.
I'm avoiding the question because I don't think Netflix will give it away for free. I think they'll still charge.
Mm. Agreed. But
Brian mentioned on last week's Spoiler in Time about how characters on The Boys shopping on Amazon took him out of the moment. That really didn't bother me. But Jeffrey says, I had a similar experience with another Amazon show, Reacher. One scene when they go to a person's house and ring the doorbell didn't produce the traditional ding dong. Instead, we hear the very distinct chime of a Ring video doorbell. I immediately thought it was weird for them to go out of their way to not use some sound effect from a standard library. But then it dawned on me that it's an Amazon show and Ring is an Amazon brand. To which I say, Jeffrey, you would be going out of your way to use a sound effect instead of just pressing a Ring doorbell that might have happened to already be installed in the house you're shooting in.
Well, and again, what I liked about this email is that Jeffrey didn't say it was a good thing or a bad thing, He didn't characterize me as not liking that moment, but it is the case that it took me out of it because I had to pause to consider, much like I do with a lot of brands, like even as a kid, I remember thinking, that's weird that they're Reese's Pieces. Why wouldn't you use M&Ms? And then only years later did I find out how marketing in movies works.
And that's why I was not trying to argue that it didn't take you out of the moment, but I will argue that the reason it took you out of the moment is probably a weird headspace we've all gotten ourselves into. Not that it's actually bad for a Ring doorbell to be in an Amazon show, because if the Amazon show was, as many TV shows are, not produced by Amazon and maybe even like scripted out to have a Ring doorbell before Amazon even bought it, they might have decided to have it be a Ring doorbell because lots of people have Ring doorbells.
And in that case, there would be a selection bias, a survivor bias for, like, you probably recognized the sound and thought, ooh, that's that sound that I know. Why is that there? And then you did the math and put it together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Similar to, I'm going to bet if nobody told me that Ted Lasso was an Apple TV Plus property, I would never notice all of the iPhones and Mac.
Yeah, absolutely. Stuff. Exactly. Yeah. Right. It's a headspace you get into. It's not a a priori fundamental flaw necessarily. It might be.
One quick note, we got a message from one of our bosses, our patrons, the only people that we really listen to, saying that I was very mean to Meryl last week. It occurred to me that I should probably give context, and I actually called Meryl to make sure that this was okay. Meryl and I are collaborators on projects outside of Cord Killers. It is a known issue that I don't mind being the bad guy who moves Meryl along in service of keeping us to an hour-long show. So if it comes across as me being unfairly brutal to Meryl, please know that it comes from a place of love and genuine friendship with him.
Yeah. I was at Meryl's birthday on Saturday, and as usual, he was talking excitedly about the projects that y'all are working on. So I'm sure that's the case. All right, that's it for us. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. And we are live on twitch.tv/nightattack, which is also carried on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will be off next week for the Independence Day holiday in the U.S., but we will be back the week after. We'll talk to you next time.
Hey, Tom Merritt, what's going on?
I'm just hanging out here watching this scroll go by. What are you doing?
Trying to set up a bit where we thank our beautiful, beautiful patrons, all these wonderful names.
I'm sorry, I'm too distracted looking at these beautiful, beautiful patron names going by. Look at that one. I mean, if you wanted to be one of these people, patreon.com/cordkillers would be the place to go.
I mean, they're scratching our itch, like, because we're addicted. I think
as long as it's consensual, like,
we're addicted to their money.
And love. Might as well face it.
Well, God damn it.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.